Oliver Stone is a film lover's director. He has directed some of the biggest, most successful, and in some cases, very controversial films of the last 40 years or so. 30-odd years, I think, is closer to it. He's written an autobiography of the first 40 years of his life, ending with his Oscar for the best film for Platoon in 1986. The book is called Chasing the Light, and I recorded an interview with him about it last week, and thank goodness George has cut the opening few minutes of that interview, which was me gushing about how wonderful it was to be talking to Oliver Stone. But then I got into a vaguely journalistic question and asked him what prompted him to want to tell his personal story in this way.
Well, I guess you get to a certain age, and what does it all mean? The films go by very fast. Time goes by very fast, especially when you're making the movies one after another. You know, fully appreciate it. You don't get to stop and think that much. But this is quite, it's like going back and visiting it again and living your life a second time through and appreciating it, which is gives you a lot of insight into the movies as well as your relationships with your parents and so forth. Marriages.
Your parents, what a pair they were. The American serviceman who comes back as a Republican stockbroker. Your mom, free-spirited, French, glamorous, and you write about them. If my parents had truly known each other before they were married, they would never have united, and I would never have existed. Children like me are born out of that original lie, and living a false front, we suffer for it when we feel that nothing and nobody can ever be trusted again. Adults become dangerous, reality becomes loneliness, love either does not exist or cannot survive. That is really vulnerable. That is really kind of heart-on-sleeve stuff.
It's what a heart on what?
Heart on sleeve. You're wearing your heart on your sleeve about your childhood.
Oh, I see. Well, my heart on my sleeve, it happened, and it did have a psychological effect, impact on me over a period of years, so I think I have the right to. You say heart on your sleeve, I think it's being honest about your life, warts and all. So many marriages. So many marriages are like that. The parents often don't know each other, and it's a romance. They think they're in love, and it was wartime. It was after the war in Paris, liberation, petty spring, and my father, as I quoted in the book, said these things about my mother and wanted to get married, but wanted her more as a breeder, as a mother. And on her side, she was rather immature and young still. So it led to disillusionment, as often happens. It got pretty traumatic. But I didn't know anything. That's the point, you see. I was living in a fairyland, a dreamland, for 15 years until this one day in my life when I got this phone call saying that they were divorcing. And boom, the whole world changes overnight. And I had to deal with that. I wasn't able to deal with it when I was 15, but as I look back, and as I said earlier, it gives you the luxury of looking back. You're not sick or you're not in prison. You can look back and you say, wow, this is the problem that I had in my life. It was a fundamental contradiction between my parents, which created a fundamental contradiction in me. And I go on to describe various forms of it, such as being the writer is my mother. I talk about that. I mean, the writer is my father, and the director part of me is my mother, because she was more social and more outgoing and like people so much. So there's two sides, and they're in conflict often, the writer and the director. So that opens up a whole psychoanalysis of how a writer and director can deal in this world with movies, making movies, as well as in his thinking.
At 15, you get that call, and at 21, you drop out of Yale and you volunteer to serve in Vietnam, and of course you explain why you did it, and then You write about what it was like, absolutely horrible. Of course, it informed the magnificence that Platoon was as a movie. And, I mean, we had a foreign adventure of our own in South Africa. We fought a war that we shouldn't have fought. It not on the same scale, and I don't think with the same kind of impact on the national psyche that Vietnam had on America. But, I mean, it is so profound how it affected you and how it affects so many people still. The way you write about it, and war poisoned me too. The truth, though not admitted by the majority of those who'd served there, was that Vietnam had debased us all. Whether we killed or not, we were part of a machine that had been so morally dead as to bomb, napalm, poison this country head to toe when we knew this was not a real war to defend our homeland. And you give us this extraordinary picture of young Oliver Stone trying to make sense of something out of which no sense can be made. Obviously an extremely formative experience.
Yes. And it takes time to realize it. I certainly did not realize it at the time when I came back. I did not become a protester. I was alienated. I was numb. And it took me years to ingest the experience, and then I wrote about it. To a certain degree, with Platoon in 1976, which was 8 years after the war. But, you know, history has a way of overtaking all of us, and the truth is, I, looking back, I think that my father's generation was the end of it, the end of this American prosperity, this growth, and it signaled a new decline. I mean, the Vietnam War and the Korean War were very much a decline in our standards, in our callousness, in the way we did things, and it continued in my lifetime. So this is what I witnessed. I've witnessed this decline firsthand. We've gone to four more wars since then, and as I lamented that we didn't seem to learn anything from it, from the first experience. It was so negative.
America didn't seem to learn much from it, but Oliver Stone, in some way, learnt something from it, perhaps only in retrospect decades later. But again, you can't imagine yourself as not having gone to Vietnam, because you did go to Vietnam, so to imagine That's alternate right. life is impossible.
Yes. And I talk about coming back. I talk about the war in depth. I talk about the lies, what they meant, and how big they were. And I talk about I experienced, for example, on Boy on the 4th of July, which I was writing in 1979 after Platoon. That became a movie with Tom Cruise. It was a story, a real-life story of another paraplegic, Ron Kovic, who was shot in that war. And I got to know him very well and his group around him, and it opened my eyes to the suffering of others in that war that had come back to a nightmare in this country. And Ron's still alive, and he's still a witness to it. And he's fought against every war we've been in since then, and he's protested, not in vain, but he meant something. And I think the movie meant something, too.
Yeah.
Well, he got it made. Platoon got made 10 years after 76 and 86, and it was a part of this resurgence in my career. I'd been up and down. I'd been in Midnight Express, an Oscar, and I'd written Scarface, but I'd also had setbacks in The Hand and other films, and I was down on my luck. In 1985, I made two films in a row, Salvador and Platoon, and that turned it all around in a sudden overnight kind of success, which happened in 1986, with the Oscar. The film Platoon made a fortune all around the world, every single country. Great reviews, changed the thinking of many people. It was quite a symbolic victory of people who wanted to remember the war in another way. It was not as a glorification of our role there, but as the truth. And that changed my life. It cast me into another world completely.
Yeah,
it was a realization of a dream, a miracle to be a writer and a director. It took 18 years, and I wanted to convey the power of that to the young people who are coming up, that how much work it takes to get your dream, to achieve it. and many setbacks. And also success and failure both teach you things, but failure also teaches you a lot and shouldn't be discounted or discredited.
It wasn't, Platoon wasn't the first Vietnam War movie. You mentioned Born on the 4th of July. There'd been Michael Cimino's Deer Hunter. There'd been Francis Ford Coppola's Apocalypse Now. But certainly for me here in South Africa, having come out of 2 years of military service where I had witnessed combat as a documentary filmmaker doing military service in that form, I'd witnessed combat, but I'd not taken part in it. I mean, there was something about Platoon, its rawness, its passion, its deep intensity that really a lot of people in this country who'd had an experience of war, either as a combatant or as a family member of a combatant, so many families lost people. It was a film that, and I looked at it again a couple of weeks ago in preparation for chatting to you, and it is a film which still has that extraordinary power to hold you and shake you. It's when last did you see it?
I saw it recently too. I made that point. No, it's a realistic film because it was based on my being there, and as good as they were, Apocalypse Now and Deer Hunter were wonderful films, but they're mythic. They're larger than life. They had no basis in the reality that I saw there. It was the everyday reality, what I call a grunt, infantryman, day in, day out in the jungle for 15 months. And it's also a very dark film because the young man who goes over there goes to the dark side, too. And that sounds like Richard Cheney talking, but I mean, what I'm saying is he's stained. He comes back from that war alive, but his shadow is over him the rest of his life. He knows it, too, and he feels an obligation to remember this war and what it did to him. It's not an experience to be dismissed or forgotten. You can't forget a war. You have to remember it. And that's partly what I did through this movie.
There's John Daly, who helped you get Platoon distributed, told an interviewer in 1995, Oliver puts 100% of himself into a film. It all goes up on the screen. For Salvador, he waived his salary, he waived his expenses. I think he would have given up his house. For him, it's the film. And that is why, whether he gets things right or wrong, there is an intensity up on the screen that could only come from a man with absolute passion. And I read that, and it made so much sense to me, having seen, you know, Midnight Express, for which you wrote the screenplay, Scarface. I'd seen Salvador. I'd seen many times Platoon and the movies after that, which I hope you will be writing about in a sequel to this first book. It is the film, and, I mean, you probably made some enemies because you focused on the film rather than the people around you, but it's what gives your film the intensity and the watchability that they have.
Thank you, John. I put it into every film since then. I haven't changed my style. Unfortunately, sometimes it's misunderstood. You're right. The passion is misunderstood. My feeling is very strong about the war, about our role in the wars as a country. So I try to tie my personal story, which is one of evolution and growth. My thinking had evolved from my father's rather conservative and believed in the war up until near the end of his life. So my conservative thinking took a long time to evolve and change. And I feel like I've been all over the spectrum, moving towards a more humanitarian point of view. And the Salvador War, too, was a civil war in America, in the Americas in 1980-81. And I covered that in 1985, going down there with a journalist friend. It was a cruel, vicious war, and the United States supported the death squads, which were, at that point, very much like what you had in Africa, but, you know, the death squads were killing a lot of reformers, teachers, unionists, labor unionists, and cruel war, and I depicted it in the movie with Jimmy Woods, which got an Oscar nomination, too, for screenplay and for Jimmy. It was a very... Both films hit the same year and made quite an impact. To have two films in 1 year that were nominated for an Oscars and won one. not only did it win, but Elizabeth Taylor gave me the Oscar on the stage, and she'd always been one of my idols, you know. I was one of the most sexy women in the world at that, in the 1950s. It was quite a treat to get an Oscar from her.
You mentioned Jimmy Woods. Have you had a conversation with him since the book was published? Because his behavior in Salvador doesn't come across too well.
Well, he was antic. I mean, it was a wild film. In terms of filmmaking annals, young students of film would certainly learn a lot. Everything could go wrong, and yet we made the movie good. So we overcame every obstacle possible, including some of the behavior. It was an insane experience, but it toughened me and my crew to go on and like to do Platoon right away in the Philippines, also under a very tight budget. And nothing was expected of the movie. It was looked on as a B film in the Philippines, like a Chuck Norris film, but we broke through in a big way. Nobody expected anything from that film. Don Daly, bless his soul, was the most shocked of all. But he stuck with me after Salvador had a rocky evolution. And we barely finished it. But he stuck with me right away, and he said, go back to the Philippines and make this. And no matter how short of money sometimes we were or in trouble, I always felt he was a guardian angel and was there, and that was important.
Yeah, and the description of making Platoon in the Philippines and Salvador, the two movies together, and we see a finished product. We see a product which has been filmed and has been edited, and you write, obviously, with enormous insight into the role that the editing process plays. But there's no way that you can tell from the movie that you're watching on a big screen just how much hardship and drama and tension and sleeplessness and crotch rot and was happening while you were filming.
Takes a lot of spirit and belief. Each film did in the end. I mean, I directed 20 films and 8-9 documentaries, and I have to tell you, on 20 films, I killed myself making them, maybe too much so. I don't know how some people make 50. I think some people go on because they invest less in it, so they're able to make more films. But I find that each one is going to drain me.
And to finish with, you finish this in 1986 with yourself accepting the Oscar for Platoon, and there's a lot in your career after that. I'm fascinated to know what you think now about JFK and the Natural Born Killers and all those movies and all the stuff that was whirling around them. How long will I have to wait for the second volume of the autobiography?
Well, it depends on the success of the first, you know. But, what can I say? I feel like at the age of 40, the book starts at 30, goes back in time, and ends at 40. In that year, I had achieved, finally, this dream I had of being a writer-director. So it was a sort of a sad story, end of story. I had achieved it, realized it. Once you've done that at that fundamental level, it means a lot to anybody. It's a midlife pickup. It's like, okay, now what am I running from? And that's what happened. You know, you wonder why, what your motivations were. I plunged in, kept going, and I had many twists and turns to follow, including so many controversies I can't even take in a book to just sum them up. How to tell such a winding road that it takes after that. It'll be a challenge, but certainly the highlights were JFK and Natural Born Killers and Alexander, above all, and many political controversies with my documentaries, of course. It doesn't stop. I seem to have touched a nerve in American history. I feel like very much so, but I'm at a focal point here, and the American Empire is coming to a head here, a climax, where it's being questioned like it never has been before.
Oliver Stone about his, well, I suppose he doesn't call it part one, and he does reference in that book the possibility that he might write part two if part one is sufficiently well received. I, for one, hope that he does write part two. I'm very interested, for example, what he says about things like that four-hour Putin documentary. And I simply could not understand how Oliver Stone could have put together a documentary which was so almost fawning about Vladimir Putin. So I'm very, very interested to find out more about his view on that. The book is called Chasing the Light, Oliver Stone.